everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. We are off and running on our midweek edition. It's Wednesday, the first Wednesday in April, April 2nd, 2025. My buddy Tom Fairbanks is on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing the show. Tom, it looks like we've got a really nice weather forecast. Discounting yesterday, and you know how our listeners know how I feel about
breezy conditions.
Oh, and those dusty winds. And of course, it was very dangerous. I think we had some traffic accidents out on I-10 yesterday, so it was a very dangerous afternoon to actually be out and about. But going forward, it looks like we're going to be in 70s and 80s territory, and you know how I like that.
Yeah, particularly the mid-70s, although, and this should be okay, too, I think for the posies. We might get some showers Friday afternoon.
Oh, boy, do we need a shower, right? And we'll be talking about that with City Councilman Kevin Dahl about our really the driest period in Tucson history that we are in the midst of right now. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. They have the naming rights, and I'm so glad they do, to this studio when the Buckmaster Show goes live. We're at the Bustos Media Center in central Tucson. Very proud of the fact that we have five great radio stations now under one roof. Our newest acquisition, 101.7 The Drive, doing so well. Very listened to product, and we're very happy with that. And we like what we're, of course, we're on 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. We're in our 15th year with our radio program. You can listen to the show live at buckmastershow.com. It's also the place for all of our podcasts. We've got podcasts going all the way back to the first week that we did the show. In January of 2011, when we do our telephone interviews, that's sponsored by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management once a month, usually the first Wednesday of the month, depending on how the city council schedule is. We bring in Tucson City Council Ward member Kevin Dahl, Democrat, who has been now in his completing his first full term, right?
That's right. Yeah. Three and a half years.
Kevin's retired in 2022, but it's not like when Kevin became a council member, it was like, oh, I'm Bill Buckmaster. It's nice to meet you, Kevin. And it's like this was our first interchange. And no, it wasn't. We go back actually when he was like executive director of Native Seed Search, then he was executive director of the Tucson Audubon Society. We did some interviews when he was the Arizona representative of the National Conservation Association. And I think, Kevin, you did that for 14 years before retiring in 2022.
I've had a long career in conservation, Bill. Yeah.
You really have, and you've actually authored some books about it. Wild Plants of the Sonoran Desert, published by the Arizona Sonora Desert Museum. Then you have a book called Native Harvest, Authentic Southwestern Gardening, published by the Western Parks Association. So you're very much into conservation. April is Conservation Month, if you will, Earth Day Month, Earth Day itself, I'm guessing, from recall, April 22nd. But there's activities really going on the whole time.
There's so many opportunities to pick up litter, plant trees, go to Earth Day events, and to rethink what you're doing at your home.
Mm-hmm. And first of all, it's good to see you. Formally welcome you back to the program. And Tom was telling me about there is a slight chance. Well, I think he said 30% chance of rain this week. And I'll tell you, any rain would be so beneficial right now, because if you look at the way it has set up since August, kind of as the monsoon was winding down until March, we're in the driest period in Tucson history, and that goes back to 1895.
It's amazingly dry out there. The plants, a lot of desert plants know how to survive through these droughts, but they can't do it forever. And you'll see trees that are suffering and prickly pear whose pads are shriveled. Plants in your yard that you love especially, might be important to give them a little extra water once or twice a week.
I know that we've heard, most people have heard, I think, of buffel grass, which has been a threat it's kind of the most famous, as you write in your weekly newsletter.
It's the Jesse James of invasive plants.
And by the way, your newsletter is probably one of the most extensive newsletters from a government official that I've ever seen. I mean, you could probably spend the afternoon reading your newsletter. You've got all these contributors, incredible list of events. What do people send you? Stuff that's going on, then you put it in there?
Yeah, not only in Ward 3, but throughout the city, nonprofits and other groups doing events that would be of interest to the residents of Ward 3 know to send us their information. Plus, I have fabulous staff at the Ward 3 office, and all of them contribute to the newsletter.
So getting back to the threatening invasive plants, there is something called stink net, like the word stink and then net. What the heck is that?
Well, it's an invasive species. You'll see fields of it in Maricopa County, and now we're starting to see it in Tucson. So the Desert Museum and the many partners that are concerned about it are working to eradicate it, keep it out of Pima County. It's one of those invasive plants that take over, and it's just a nasty little thing. It used to have a cute name, wild chamomile, because it kind of looks like a chamomile flower, but stink net, because it is smelly when you pick it up. Is so much more appropriate. You know, the drought has one advantage in that we won't see the huge fields of it this year, but mm-hmm. we will see it wherever water has puddled or where there's a drip or a leak. And so we're asking people to learn how to spot it. It has round little yellow balls of flower, very low plant. And like you say in my newsletter,
some people think it must look pretty, it looks prettier.
It does look pretty. A field of it is yellow, and if you don't know, I mean,
mm-hmm. yeah. Ooh, gee, it's are great wildflower flower season, right? We got stink net in our backyard. So getting rid of this stuff. Where do these things come from?
Well, I forget the origin, but it was somewhere, probably not in the United States, and it came over on someone's pants leg or in a. It was with some other seeds that were gathered for some other purpose or foodstuffs. Things spread because people fly on airplanes from like here to Tahiti and all around the world.
Yeah. Yeah, folks taking long trips. So what can be done? Is there some kind of an organization that is working together to get rid of this?
Well, the Sonoran Desert Museum is spearheading the eradication program. And I think it's stinknet.com or stinknet.org.
Org.
.org, yeah. Where you can find more information about it. And it's important to report it. I mean, you can easily pick it up and destroy it, put it in a plastic bag, throw it away. But we want to know where it's showing up so that they can plan their activities, their eradication programs.
It does look like, and I'm looking at your website, which has your newsletter has a whole thing about stink net. It's very similar, I guess, to a native dogweed. It looks a little like that.
Yes, yeah. Once you look at the flowers side by side, you can tell the differences that are first are subtle, but once you've done it once, twice, or three times, you'll know the difference. But yeah, and you know, I'm surprised, Bill, that a lot of people don't pay attention to flowers. We have an incredible array of wildflowers and also domesticated flowers in people's yards. This spring, even though it's been dry, where people have been watering in their yards, we're starting to see the spring wildflowers, and they're just gorgeous.
You know, we'll be talking extensively about the whole homelessness issue with Kevin Dahl in segment number two, but kind of maybe we can segue into that since we are still talking about your newsletter. I learned something. That's why I'm in this business, why I come to work every day, to learn as much as I can. And you profiled a place where homeless people can drop it. They can spend a night, or what is this place?
Yeah, the Poverello House.
Yes.
Was set up by the Franciscan Order mm-hmm. to provide services to at first men, and now there's a day when women are invited in. Just a certain number of people can have a home-like experience. They can watch TV. They can take a shower. They can go in the bedroom and take a nap. They can find clothes. There's food for them to eat there and to take with them. And it also provides, for that day, a sheltered experience where they can learn about services. When you're living on the streets, when you don't have shelter, it's not an easy existence.
No.
As you can imagine. But you lose or your wallet is stolen. And to get back into society, there's steps that you need to take. You need to be able to take a shower and put on good clothes to get a job. You need to have the ID to get the job. Mm-hmm. And you might need counseling. You probably are facing, many people are facing mental challenges or, mm-hmm. or addiction.
And do you have to make an appointment? Well, I don't know. Probably. I was going to say, do you make an appointment? But a lot of homeless people don't have cell phones or I don't know.
Staff and volunteers from Poverello House reach out.
That's
people
how they,
on the street.
That's how they find them.
Yeah, and they bring them in. You know, Bill, since you brought it up, homelessness and people on the street is a huge problem nationwide and in Tucson, where it's a beautiful place to live on the street. Mm-hmm. And it's increasing for so many reasons, and it's something that the city of Tucson, many nonprofit partners, other agencies are working on hard. So I look forward to in our next segment
we're
to talking more about that.
We're going to pick up on that. But right now, Kevin, this is the premier week for a new sponsor here on the program. Kevin, we're welcoming a very well-known agency in this town, Pima Council on Aging.
To talk about one of our partners.
Mm-hmm.
Our staff send people to them all the time.
Mm-hmm. Support comes on the Buckmaster Show from Pima Council on Aging. PCOA's mission is to promote dignity, respect for aging, and independence in the lives of Pima County's older adults and their families. PCOA offers vital programs and services. They offer accurate information and advocacy that could impact aging adults. Find out more at their website, PCOA.org. And again, we're glad to have Pima Council on Aging joining the roster of terrific sponsors who make our work possible here in Tucson. We'll be right back with Tucson City Councilman Kevin Dahl.
The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com. All right, welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition. Kind of feels like a Tuesday because we took Monday off. And we're back with Kevin Dahl, Tucson City Councilman. Kevin, now that the U.S. Supreme Court has opened the door for cities and towns to make their own rules regarding homelessness ordinances, officials not only in Tucson, but really pretty much every municipality are trying to balance the humanitarian values with the desire to keep streets and parks clean and safe.
Well, Bill, I think Tucson has been trying to do that at least for the last 3.5 years that I've been on the city council. When I came on, police was the only city staff that would respond when there was an encampment or someone had a problem with someone who was living on the street. We set up the community safety, health, and welfare group out of the manager's office. So we have trained social workers who are our first response. In conjunction with Pima County, we developed a encampment protocol. People can, through our ward office or 311 or online, can report encampments. And these social workers are the first responders, offering services, bringing in services, evaluating the camp. Most camps fall into tier one, where they're already gone, and then we bring in environmental services to do the cleanup, or tier three, where it's not in an appropriate area, and that's probably why people are reporting it. And we move them on. Now, that's not ideal because there's not often places for them to go, and it's been described as a whack-a-mole. But there are so many people on the streets, and you know, I think we have to pause and look that there's some root causes. People are on the streets for a lot of different reasons. It might have been a bad family situation, escaping domestic violence. It could be veterans who are finding back, back from the front that they can't live inside and are dealing with their trauma. It's elderly people. There's more elderly people who are in fixed incomes as the apartment rental rates went sky high.
And they wind up living in a car or a
living
truck.
Living in a car, and if you might lose your car because of some violation.
Then you have nothing.
Luckily, there are lots of services. There are lots of shelters, but there are challenges for people getting into shelters. The city of Tucson's role is to try to provide the least barriers, and we have set up housing that has almost no barriers. And we found this philosophy is housing first. Once you're in shelter, once you have four walls and a roof, then you can start dealing with the challenges that have in your life that have brought you to the situation. And we've had some fantastic success stories, but nowhere near the number of success stories that we need.
Is it against the law? Is there a law against camping in washes?
No. There's no law that says you can't camp in a wash. There are a variety of laws that describe and ordinances that you can't do things in wash. You can't have a fire. You can't impede the flow of water. You can't camp next to someone's fence or next to a business or within so many feet of a school. And if you're doing illegal activities, of course, those are illegal. The city, because there's this opportunity, the state level, a voter-approved initiative gives property owners the right to appeal to the state. If they feel a municipality, could be county, city, whatever, is not enforcing their laws and they're being impacted by that, they can file for a percentage of their property taxes getting returned. Now, that doesn't impact Tucson very much because we have very low property taxes. Pima County uses property taxes. But it made us pause and think, we have some laws on the books that we're not enforcing. For instance, we had an anti-panhandling law that the Supreme Court has ruled is unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
So we removed that and exchanged a median, a law that affects medians, so that you're not allowed to, nobody is allowed to be on a median for any other reasons except crossing the street.
Mm-hmm.
Medians are not safe places for people to hang out. and to
panhandle. So within the city, if you see someone panhandling, that is against the law now?
No.
Oh.
No, that's
okay.
That's a constitutional protected right. It's free speech.
Oh.
But you can't hang out on a median.
Oh.
Now the sidewalk at the intersection is legal, but the statistics, the traffic statistics from our fire department, from our police department, medians are not safe places. And not only for the pedestrians that are on the median, panhandling or whatever.
Especially with the panhandlers that I'm seeing now with dogs. That just really...
And it's distracting to the driver. So one of the things we did at the last meeting is outlaw that. Now, we were also looking at whether we should ban camping in washes and in parks. We already prevent camping in parks at night. And it was a difficult decision, but for me, banning the camping in washes was targeting homeless people. And I heard from people who are navigators and social workers who are helping homeless people thinking that it would not be beneficial to do that. So I went with that. We can use the other laws, to remove encampments that are inappropriate in washes, and I thought that was fine.
All right, this is pretty important. It's gotten a lot of play in the media about the plan floated by one of your colleagues, council member Karen Ulick, and she had originally shared this on her newsletter, an outline of a pilot program that she was calling, I guess, Help Huts, HUTS, and this would let aid groups use several city parks to provide daytime aid and overnight campsites at larger parks scattered across the city. And according to something that Councilwoman Ulick put out on, again, a kind of a follow-up to this, she admits there was a lot of pushback to this.
Yes, and I received it as well. I think all my colleagues did. It was her idea. She hadn't checked it out with us, but a council, and I applaud her for doing this. She worked for many years with Primavera, one of the nonprofit groups that help people on the streets, and has a lot of knowledge in this area. But she's analyzed the feedback and has come up with 4 points. People don't want it in city parks for many reasons. Maybe the second point, maybe there are vacant land or buildings that are buffered from neighborhoods and from business areas where this could be implemented. And I know of at least one that's owned by Pima County where that happen, and look to successful models elsewhere. The city of Phoenix has done this. They call it safe outdoor space. Very expensive because you can't just say, hey, go camp here. You have to provide security and sanitation.
Porta potties.
Yeah, and all sorts of things. And your partners bring in services and such, but it is still very expensive for the city of Phoenix. They had a much more extensive homeless
situation.
Was it
successful, though, for them? Did they move forward with it? Or?
They're continuing. Yes. Oh. Yeah. It is expensive, but it is serving its purpose of providing a place away from alleys and washes and businesses where people can be directed. Yes, you can camp here, and your stuff will be safe, and you can wash your hands and go to the bathroom and start getting your services. And the other thing that everyone said, and I think this is right, partner with the nonprofit organizations. And Tucson is a very generous, very compassionate city. There are a lot of nonprofits and religious organizations working on this deep-seated problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, she certainly got a lot of reaction to it, right?
Yeah.
And so now what's next? Will the council then consider these 4 points, or maybe a couple of them?
Yeah, we get regular reports on homeless, and we're fine-tuning our system. We will consider these going forward. And by the way, the wash ordinance and the park ordinance is probably coming back. There was a snafu with...
Yeah, about council member Fimbres.
The team's connection.
Remote. He was up sending his vote in remotely, and people...
And we couldn't hear it. So the mayor...
So that's going to come back, right?
My colleague, Paul Cunningham, is going to bring it back for reconsideration.
So I want to clarify something you said about keeping people off the medians.
Yes.
You had said there was like a free speech issue, but then... What exactly, so if someone is out on a median with a dog, which I saw at least three medians driving into work today, is that illegal? And this person was asking for money and had an animal with him.
Okay. The fact of being on the median and not in the act of crossing the street will be illegal. I forget when this ordinance goes into effect. But once that's in effect, yes. And not with, and it doesn't matter if they're panhandling or not. Panhandling people can do. The city of Tucson, I think Pima County, used to have anti-panhandling ordinances, and those were ruled unconstitutional by the Supreme Court.
Why? Because people, this was
it's
considered
a free speech. Uh-huh. Yeah. And Bill, by the way, I want to ask you for some money.
Well, we'll see about that.
Yeah.
All right. And again, I was, you know, lauding your newsletter. Is that available to anyone in the city or anybody to subscribe?
Yeah,
how do you do that?
In the city, outside of the city, every city council member has a website. Ours
but you don't have to live in your ward to get it.
And you can look at issues before you decide to subscribe. You can subscribe by putting in your email address. And we do it once a week on Fridays. And if you don't like it, then you can turn it off.
And I have to tell you, it is kind of a sounding board about some of, you know, for these issues like homelessness.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. Kevin Dahl, thank you very much. And
thank you, Bill.
We'll see you in May.
Are you going to be here?
Actually, yeah, I will be leaving probably the day after our interview in May, the first week of May. So, and then I will be gone for probably almost 3 weeks now. We're deciding on that. So anyway, we will see you in May.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you. Take a break. Be right back.
CBS News Brief. President Trump is set to announce his reciprocal tariffs. The world economy could be impacted. Colin Slabach of New York University.
The goods that he is going to tariff, the prices are going to go up. That's what's going to happen. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Some analysts say it could also upend decades-old alliances. In Britain, Prime Minister Keir Starmer.
Our decisions will always be guided by our national interests, and that's why we have prepared for all eventualities. And we will rule nothing out.
Tesla's stock plunged after news deliveries are lower, then spiked on word Elon Musk may be leaving Trump's inner circle soon. Political analyst Larry Sabato on the Democrats' win of a Wisconsin Supreme Court seat, despite Musk's campaigning.
You don't go into a clean government state like Wisconsin and appear to buy the vote, handing out million-dollar checks to people who have signed his petition.
CBS News Brief, I'm Cammy McCormick.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our midweek edition in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things and their sister business, Zocalo Village, where they have that great sale going on, up to 50% off because they've got a few buildings on the property that are in the floodplain and they must be torn down. So the merchandise that is in those buildings has to go. And so folks are getting some great buys. They're at 3384 East River Road, and their website, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. They're open every day. They've been in business since 1970. I know the owners very well, Jan and Jack, and they really care about this business, and it's very evident if you stop by, and I hope you do, and check out their beautiful 13-acre site. When we do our telephone interviews, the live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. That's run by Sean and his friends, and they do a great job. Dr. Albrecht Clausen does a great job. He's a renowned scholar of medieval history and someone, each time he's on the program, I've added this description. I believe he's a true Renaissance man. He fits it to the T. Dr. Clausen, how are you, sir?
Oh, I am actually really well, I must say.
Good. Yeah. I want to do the full introduction for you. University of Arizona Distinguished Professor of German Studies. He has published 132 books. Yes, that's right, 132 books. And 800, is 40, that?
Yeah.
800 scholarly articles?
Yes.
840. It changes every month with my introduction. I've got to update that. 840 scholarly articles, nearly 3,000 book reviews, along with a dozen volumes of poetry, four volumes of essays, and a textbook. You wrote the textbook, A Handbook of Medieval Studies. Yeah. He's won many honors, many awards. He's the Grand Knight Commander of the Most Noble Order of the Three Lions in recognition of outstanding services to German studies. He is the editor-in-chief of the international online journal Humanities. He is a Fulbright scholar. In fact, in 2022, he spent a semester in Cairo, Egypt. And congratulations on the 20th anniversary, professor of the Early Books Lecture Series at the University of Arizona, which is coming up here next week.
Exactly. April 8, April 15, and April 22nd. The idea is to allow people in the community to learn a little bit about the bibliophile treasures we have in the library. And it is an effort also to alert us to the fact that books have values. I mean, many people say, oh, I just use the Kindle. But we are saying, no, we're looking really at real books because these books represent human life, human experience, human suffering, human joy. So it is for me. You ask me how I am. I'm wonderful. I'm very happy about my work because we can bring out scholarship and share that with the community. So the community is invited. We just have to register. And so there are two other colleagues of mine and myself giving these talks. We're addressing major books from the past and try to understand why they're so relevant for us today.
And, of course, books really began during your area of expertise, your area of study.
That's right. Well, yes. Actually, it's a very interesting history because late antiquity had only sort of papyrus and scrolls. Only in sort of in the 4th and 5th century did they discover it would be better to put this all together into the shape we know it, and we call it a codex, so really a bound book.
Mm-hmm.
And this was then the manuscript until about 1450 when Johannes Gutenberg invented the printing press.
Yeah, and that's why I was thinking about the printing press.
Yes.
But thank you for setting that up, because before the printing press, things were being written down and put on paper, right?
Well, mostly parchment, right?
Yeah.
So very difficult to write on this. Just imagine you have a quill and thick ink and then this fairly
and it runs all over the
page. Yes, but these were master calligraphers and really you know, one thing is really amazing. They had still memory. They knew thousands of books in their minds. I mean, if I look around, my students, they hardly have a memory. We're losing it left and right because everything is available online, we think, and then we're totally dependent on AI and no longer know really what we are reading. And no longer can we really draw from inspirations, and we don't know any longer what people say or said or thought about. So that is really the amazing field of older books.
I remember when the internet came along and people were saying that, well, books will probably be obsolete in 20 years. But I think people, and a lot of people do like the Kindle experience.
Yes.
But I think I was surprised how many people said, no, I like a book in my hand.
Yes.
And just evidenced by the 140,000 people who showed up for the weekend at the book festival.
So we have a very famous statement by a major scholar in my field who called this whole phenomenon, this illusion, premature obituary.
Yeah.
So, you know, premature because everyone was thinking quickly change in terms of technology. And it has proven, and I know from lots of experience, how difficult it is to work really with a book in electronic forms.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard. Of course, you can do a global search, but it's very hard really to read it deeply. So publishers increasingly want to send me just a PDF for book reviews. And I say, well, you can get from me then a very superficial review. But you want a deep read?
Yeah, deep read.
Really deep so that I
send me the book.
Yes. I need to put my finger in there. I need to mark it. I need to flip back and forth. And I cannot just run through.
Which makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So these lectures are free. They're open to the public. They're held in the outstanding special collections area of the University of Arizona Library, the reading room, right?
It is not quite. It's the special collections.
Special collections.
Yes.
And so reading room.
Right. And that is on the east side. It's always of the library. It's always at 6 p.m. People can park in the parking garage and can validate it. And it's all open for the public. But they have to register because it's a limited space.
So it's Tuesday the 8th. The 15th is a Tuesday. And then you will conclude with a presentation, which actually sounds pretty darn interesting, on Tuesday, April 22nd.
Yes.
Anyone who's been to Europe, especially Germany, have marveled, I know I have, at the craftsmanship.
Yes, that's the point.
That you see in the little towns or even large cities.
Absolutely.
That medieval craftsmen and craftswomen, I guess it's sometimes,
yeah.
These are pretty highly skilled people.
And considering they didn't have electricity,
yeah.
Had to do everything sort of by hand, and they could create these incredible cathedrals. But we have a modern example. It's very interesting. You might remember that about 3 years ago, Notre Dame burned down
yes.
in Paris.
Yes.
And so the French government was thinking really hard, how can we rebuild this? But of course, it didn't have the right craftsmen. There has been for 20 years a site northeast of Paris where a group of people recreated a castle and learned all the craft, how to build a whole castle. So they brought in all these old, new craftsmen who have built entire attic and roof of Notre Dame in the old way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that is not
Yeah, they
perfect.
Really did want to reproduce
yes.
as much as possible
yeah.
The kind of the original.
That's right.
And that was no easy task. I mean, how long did that take? I think it took four or five years.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But they had a much better understanding of wood. They knew how wood works with other parts of wood. And with already modern tools, they could create an attic that will stand or survive at least the next 400 years. I don't know.
Well, I know that's one of the reasons you get so excited about your field of study is because we see so many stunning examples of outstanding things that perhaps we don't think about that happened in your period of study in the Middle Ages.
Because we always like to put down the past.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we have talked about that many times. Our grandparents must have been really primitive, and our great-great-grandparents must have been awful people. But, you know, they had a much happier life than we.
Probably.
Much healthier life than we, probably. They ate better than we, probably.
Yeah.
They had a regular rhythm, work rhythm, and we just sort of couch potatoes, in a way.
There you go. All right, Dr. Albrecht Clausen. We've got another segment. He'll be on with segment number 4 after we take our break. University Distinguished Professor, German Studies, the College of Humanities. And again, for folks interested, that special collections that be the 20th anniversary of the early books lecture series. There are 3 lectures beginning. They're on subsequent Tuesdays beginning April 8th. Free, open to the public, held in the special collections reading room, which you say is just to the east of
the
U of A library. And parking, it's from 6 to 8 in
That's
the evening.
Right. Yes, but you need to register.
Okay, and a reception follows each lecture. Be right back on the Buckmaster Show.
Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show Midweek Edition, this portion presented by our friends in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. And it's a great getaway, especially if you like to do some outdoor activities, hiking in the Gila National Wilderness, maybe a visit to the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument, which was created by Teddy Roosevelt, I believe 1909, if memory serves me correctly. But anyway, it's certainly worth a visit. That's just north of Silver City. Start your planning now by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. And here's the good news. It's only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. A pretty easy drive. You I-10 to Lordsburg. Take a left, head up the mountain to about 5,000 to 7,000 feet, and you're going to have a great time in the Land of Enchantment. We continue in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio with Dr. Albrecht Clausen, a renowned scholar of medieval history. He is a distinguished professor of German studies at the University of Arizona, very prolific in his writing, many books, scholarly articles, thousands of book reviews, and the Arizona Humanities Council professor has reached out to you to be a speaker. And I think one of the fundamental questions that comes up is really, how do you see humanities fitting in our kind of our daily lives, which in many cases seem very remote from the humanities?
Well, that is a very important and crucial question for us. But not only for me, but really for all of us. Because in essence, how do we structure our life? How do we become good citizens? How do we work toward the goal of having a good society? We need for those goals a concept of virtues. It's an old-fashioned word, but maybe in the military, you know, honor and dignity. We don't use these words often enough because there are many different people in public life who disrespect the laws, disrespect the police, try to impeach judges because they don't reach judgments in their favor. And so they dismantle all of our moral and ethical fabric. Literature is not the panacea. I don't say that. And humanities do not solve everything. We, however, work toward the goal of instilling in our students a sense of ethics, of values, understand what are vices. We don't use these words specifically, but we practice that by studying artworks, by studying literature, poetry, movies, where human life is depicted. I use a more historical lens and look at medieval and early modern texts, but it's all the same because people operate there. People make mistakes. People suffer. People enjoy their love or whatever it might be. And for most of our students or anyone who reads, these are experiences they often don't quite have, or they don't understand what it really entails. So it's like a laboratory of human life. where we then explore and allow our readers, those who work with us, to follow us through a whole situation. They don't have to experience it themselves, but let's say, you know, suffering. How do you handle this? Love. How do you handle the quest for God? Whatever values you might have. How do you practice ethics? What does goodness mean for you? Of course, a lot of literary texts deal with the opposite, but that's a learning experience. Learning how to be a good person. A contributor to society itself.
You don't hear much about virtues anymore.
No.
It kind of got me thinking when you brought that word up. How do you view virtue versus ethics?
Virtue is very similar to ethics. These are the principles.
Yeah.
Let me give you a very simple example.
Please.
Where I can practice this every day. I enter a building.
Yes.
And most people just open the door and let the door fall.
Oh.
I always stop. I hold the door, look back. Is there someone who needs the door?
Nice.
That's a tiny, doesn't cost me anything.
Right.
In traffic, just as I came here.
Yes.
Somebody needs to merge into my lane.
Yes, yes.
That's my ethics. I say, please weave in. You're fine. You're my guest.
Yeah.
How can I help my neighbors?
Yeah.
How can I assist people, my students, for example, mm-hmm. to achieve their goals?
Mm-hmm.
How can I work nicely with my neighbors
mm-hmm.
so that their kids have a good time? These are tiny little things,
mm-hmm.
But that's what, for me, represents ethics.
Yeah.
Or that you can trust me.
Mm-hmm.
That's simply trust,
mm-hmm.
confidence. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to steal. We work together. If there's danger, we will work together.
Yeah, maybe it's old-fashioned, but
yeah.
some of us were raised with the old word good manners.
Yes.
Where you would hold the door open for someone, just
yeah.
like you were describing.
Yeah. But manners is only the practice.
The manners. Yes, the
ethics,
practice.
The values,
yes.
the idea behind it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we, it's not Sunday school. We're not
right.
practicing Sunday school
no.
or anything
no.
like that.
No.
It's really deeply grounded in philosophy, our ethics.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say, Banks, odd enough, have a high level of ethics. You can trust most banks.
I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so too. But I've always a good experience. I give them a lot of credit.
Yes.
They talk and work with me.
Yeah.
That's their whole capital. Without
sure.
that trust, I would not go to that bank.
Yes, good point.
Right? So this is the interaction of people and that we understand that we are part of the same community.
Mm-hmm.
This commitment to communicate, to collaborate for the better of everyone else.
And have you found that in your area of field and in the Middle Ages, these were things that were very much discussed?
Very much discussed, but also out of a sense of frustration because it didn't exist. So we have lots of negative examples, undoubtedly.
Yeah.
But that's the way how to explore these things, particularly today. I mean, today there are no more morals left,
mm-hmm.
hardly. Our politicians are awful. They try to destroy everything.
The old concept, Professor, of what they used to call working across the aisle,
yes.
where the Republicans and Democrats would come together and compromise.
Compromise.
That seems to be complete. That is like ancient history.
Yeah. But that destroys
us. That's really too bad. That is really too bad.
The term for that is atomization. We become atoms. And these atoms don't work together to create cells.
Okay.
So we're losing the cohesion, the glue, the social, and I would like to say the ethical cohesion,
mm-hmm.
the ethical glue that makes you and me work together very well. You know, we like each other, we're friends, and it's all fine, we can trust each other. That's a small little microscopic community, but on the larger scale.
And it just seems like with the politicians, their first priority, and of course I'm speaking generally here, is to get reelected.
Yeah.
And they don't want to, offend somebody that could help them get reelected.
Yes.
I mean,
it's wrong.
It is wrong.
The first call for a president, for example, should be, I don't care whether you will reelect me. I will do what I believe is the best for this country.
And
if it's not popular, then let it be not popular and you don't elect me again. That is fine.
Okay.
You know,
I'm going to wrap it up with you in a good half hour. And again, for folks joining us, because I always think of the noon hour, people are in and out of cars listening. Again, the details, three Tuesdays in April, beginning April 8th, then the 15th, and then you'll be on the 22nd.
Yes.
At the special, from 6 to 8 at the University Special Collections Reading Room, celebrating really the 20th anniversary of your early books lecture series.
Yes.
And really is a great opportunity. This is free.
Yes, it is free. It doesn't cost anything.
Good
service. The public is invited.
Yeah.
You know, because we want to reach out to the people. Mm-hmm. We want to open up the ivory tower. The public needs to know we are there for them.
Yeah. Yep.
Because we're taxpayers.
And universities are so under fire these days. And come out and see some of the good things going on at the university. Thank you, Professor, very much.
I'm very happy. Mm-hmm.
On behalf of Professor Clausen and Tom on the other side of the glass, thanks, Tom, engineering and producing the show, Bill Buckmaster here, wishing everybody well.